This is an I Am Listening podcast.
For me, I could see that if we didn't take a decision and we didn't look at our leadership, and by the way, I don't believe that leadership is the only challenge that we face in politics today, and that's true of any party, not just mine. But certainly for me, it was a weakness. I saw it as a weakness, and I couldn't see it getting better. At the point that I resigned, I felt that it become irrecoverable for Keir Starmer, and I couldn't see how we turned that around.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Thanks for joining us on the Kent Politics Pod Show after another frenetic spell both here in the county and also at Westminster. I'm Simon Finlay, local democracy reporter covering the soon-to-be-abolished Kent County Council. And my accomplice today is Dan Essen, who reports on the soon-to-be-abolished districts and boroughs.
Hello there.
And also here is Robert Boddy, who also covers the soon-to-be-abolished Medway Council.
Hello.
In this episode, we'll hear about life in the Labour Party now that there's a new Prime Minister in town, Andy Burnham. And now that we know how local government reorganisation is going to look in Kent, the former leader of Kent County Council, Roger Gough, will be casting a dispassionate eye across what happens next. But first up, it's been a week of two by-elections, both interesting for very different reasons. Rob, we had a result in the Cuxton, Halling and Riverside by-election last week, and Reform have triumphed.
Yes, that's right. So this is the ward in sort of northwest Medway. It's a couple of small villages in a section of Strood, and it was called because the councillor Phil Filmer, who'd been a Conservative councillor for years and years, had passed away. So as you say, yes, Reform won. William Burville was their candidate. There was a pretty high turnout, 37.5%.
That is high for a midterm by-election in the middle of summertime, isn't it?
And of that, 35% of people voted for Reform. So they got 838 votes. Now, this had been a Conservative seat for basically, well, since Medway Council was created. William Burville said that Reform had taken the jewel from the Conservatives' crown in Medway because they were bumped into second place, 726 votes.
It was about 5% ahead, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And obviously, that was a big blow for the Conservatives. There were some sort of quite worried faces as the votes were being counted. I think also disappointed will be the Greens, who were bumped into third place.
Because they really thought they had a chance, didn't they?
Well, so the last time that this ward went to, was put to the voters was back in 2023 when it was a whole council election, and the Greens were only 45 votes short of winning a seat on Medway Council. This time around, they only got 482 votes, so that kind of has opened up quite a bit, and they were bumped firmly into third place.
Okay, well, that's the first, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the first by-election Reform won since May 2025 when they swept the boards at KCC?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Reform won two by-elections in Medway in February 2025, which is obviously pre the sort of KCC wipeout, or landslide rather, wipeout of the Tories, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And the other one that's just been called is at Guston, Kingstown and St Margaret's at Cliff. Now, that's, for people who don't know what that is, that's a sort of between Dover and Deal along the coast. Normally pretty firm Conservative ground. Always had a fairly big Labour presence, but more recently the Green Party has come up, but has never been properly contested by Reform. Now, Reform have chosen as their candidate a county councillor called James DeFrent, who is very, very active in the Dover area, won a massive amount of votes at the May 2025 election, and is got a very, very high profile from the work he does locally and also what he does as a county councillor. Now, the interesting thing about this one is that Restore Britain, I think possibly for the first time in the county, possibly even the country, they're going to stand a candidate in a local by-election. And that is significant because it'll be essentially a three-way tussle for the vote on the right. Possibly splintering the vote three ways, or it could be that just that the hard right vote, the Reform and the Restore Britain vote, may splinter and then just knock themselves both out, and the Tories will take it. Nobody seems to quite know why. What is the significance of Restore, do you think, in elections coming up?
Well, I mean, there's not that many votes to split. Firstly, frankly, you know, it's a single district council ward. It's not that many people. So when we talk about splitting the vote, we are talking of, you know, hundreds, sometimes tens of people. But like you say, this ward in, you know, it's kind of basically quite posh rural area between Dover and Deal, pretty well to do as far as it goes. It's sort of recent increase in population from new builds and that kind of thing, but it's pretty well to do. Solid, like true
older, but not old.
Yeah. St. Margaret's at Cliff in particular, if you like people from the area will know, that's a very, very nice, quaint little coastal village. But the, you know, the function of Restore in this election will be the same as their function everywhere, which is basically to drag votes away from Reform. And I suppose that's kind of secondary to the question, how many voters in that area will still vote Tory, even though the long-term councillor Martin Bates has left, and how many will give it a crack at something else, like, for example, Reform or Restore. I can't imagine, this is a drama I've banged on this podcast many a time, but Restore is basically a party known largely by people who are on social media quite a lot. I don't think...
So you don't think that will...
No, I mean, they'll probably get a few tens of votes, which will be irritating for Reform, but I don't imagine they'll be sucking away Reform and Conservative votes in any large number. I don't think people in that kind of area are likely to be too au fait with the latest goings-on what...
But they, Restore have actually chosen a local candidate, a guy who actually lives in Kingsdown and is actually from Kingsdown, which I am told actually matters in that particular ward at Dover District Council.
I can't speak. I'm from Dover Town itself. I can't speak to the national. I can't speak to the psyche.
You would be foreign.
Case.
Yeah, and James DeFrent isn't from that area.
No, he represents Dover Town, river kind of area, if I remember rightly. I mean, I'm sure it probably helps. You know, this is always the nature in these. The more local an election is, the more local the candidate. Tends to give you some clout. But again, will that be what swings it? Will there be people in Kingsdown who say, oh yeah, I was going to vote Reform, but the Reform candidate's from Dover? On the other hand, this party, which if you Google, you will just find loads of stuff suggesting that they're significantly more extreme, but he's the local guy from down the road, I'll vote for him. I don't know. I don't think Restore will win it. I don't know who will, but I don't think Restore really have any chance of doing that.
As this goes out, the nominations hadn't yet closed, but we'll soon know by Saturday or next Monday, the full list of people who will be taking part in that one. And one other little interesting vignette during the week, Julian Brazier, former MP.
Yeah, former Tory member for Canterbury for 35 years or something like that. He was unseated in Rosie Duffield's surprise election victory in 2017 when she became the first Labour MP for the city. He, as far as I could tell, he'd been living quite a quiet life since losing his seat almost 10 years ago. He certainly didn't involve himself too strongly in the kind of politics of Canterbury. But he, this week, announced basically after being a Tory of 50 years, he's joined Reform, and he's been pictured smiling on the campaign trail with Nigel Farage over in Clacton. I think he really must believe what he says, that he thinks the Tories are a spent force and that Reform is the future of the right, because I'm not sure if he wants to stand again, but I certainly don't think he would imagine that Reform could possibly win in Canterbury, because I don't think anyone could really come to that estimation.
Lashaba Khan has been the MP for Gillingham and Raynham since 2024 in Labour's landslide election victory, and she played a role in the resignation of Sir Keir Starmer. And she's here to tell us a little bit about that and the possibility of a Burnham bounce. Thank you very much, Adina Shaba, for coming in to see us today.
Thank you for having me.
Just tell us what happened. What was your part that you played? You were a junior minister in the Starmer administration. Just tell us what happened.
Well, I was a parliamentary private secretary under Keir, a role that I loved. But I took the decision that I could no longer continue in that role because, unfortunately, I had lost confidence in the ability of Keir Starmer to be able to lead us any longer. And that is a decision that I did not take lightly. It is something that was incredibly difficult to do, but I felt it was the right thing to do given where we were at. And I want to say that when I was first elected back in 2024 in July, and we won a huge majority. And I have to credit Keir with the incredible work he did in turning our party around, making it electable, making it possible for that win. All of those things are true. Unfortunately, what I found when I went into government is that the leadership that I was hoping for wasn't necessarily there. So there were some really good things that we did in government that I'm incredibly proud of. You know, the renters' rights Act, the work that we did around getting rid of the two-child cap, all of this are things that are hugely transformative and will be, and will have, you know, if they're not already, in the longer term, will have a big impact, certainly on my constituency. But there was a real lack of vision that followed the leadership that
we had. It wasn't a personality thing. It was purely the sort of like the direction of the party. And let's face it, was it the long-term electability?
I think it was all of those things. I think personality does play into it. I have a lot of lot of respect for Keir, and I think he's an incredibly honourable person. I think he stands for a lot, and he came in with all the right intentions. And you know, in many ways, I have a lot of respect for him on that. But unfortunately, we were in a space where, you know, we were taking policy decisions, and often it looked like as though we'd been dragged there to the right position. We wouldn't go there in the right place to start with. So if we look at winter fuel, that decision that came in very, very early as a new MP, and you know, we were asked to go out there and sell this. And actually, look, I understood it at the time. I recognised that there was a huge challenge with winter fuel. I recognised that we needed to reform the system. I recognised that it needs to be fair. So I don't believe that millionaires should have access to winter fuel allowance. However, the way that was introduced, the way it was done, to then later, you know, months later down the line, be dragged into a different position on it, when we could have started there in the first place.
Yeah, I get that. So do you think that, I mean, there was a lot of U-turns. I think the last time we looked at that, I think the last time we counted down was 14 and counting. Yeah. That's quite a lot to be rowing back on. Yeah. Okay, some of the big, some small, but it starts to build up a narrative of a guy who's really not a political animal, or realising what... Is that a fair criticism?
I think it is, actually. I think one of the challenges that Keir had is that he wasn't a politician. And he sort of said that himself. He certainly, and that doesn't mean that he didn't, you know, he wasn't able to do great things, or that he didn't have that real grasp of an understanding of some of what was in front of him. But he wasn't able necessarily to take that political messaging, that kind of, the U-turns were certainly a part of that conversation. And it was... It became very, very difficult as an MP to understand how that we were going to continue along that path. And for me, I could see that if we didn't take a decision and we didn't look at our leadership, and by the way, I don't believe that leadership is the only challenge that we face in politics today, and that's true of any party, not just mine. But certainly for me, it was a weakness. I saw it as a weakness, and I couldn't see it getting better. At the point that I resigned, I felt that it'd become irrecoverable for Keir Starmer, and I couldn't see how we turned that around.
You say, you know, Starmer, by his own admission, wasn't particularly political. He didn't really see himself as a politician. Surely that's quite a bad sign for the political culture of the Labour Party. You know, he was elected as an MP in 2015. He, by all accounts, had been a member and supporter of the Labour Party for a long time. And then he comes to power in 2021, essentially promising to be kind of an electable radical. And then 4 years later, he's basically saying, I'm not that political, I'll just be a competent manager of the state. And it's the political culture of the Labour Party which created him. Sure, that's quite a bad sign for the Labour Party, that the party of work, the party of Labour, that wants to transform society, essentially ends up being led by a guy who's just a skilled civil service manager, and then throws him out because it ends terribly.
So I don't think that's necessarily true. I think with Keir Starmer, he was always quite honest about who he was when he came into politics. And he had quite a rapid rise within the Labour Party. And in that space, he was incredibly competent. And he did have ideas. He did have beliefs and the fundamentals of politics that we all share. And he talked about his own personal story as well. And that is an important part of who he is and what he was trying to do. And it was that those sort of values that are part of it, you know, the value sets that he had. I mean, we all joke about it now because he constantly said that he was the son of a toolmaker. But actually, when you think about it, that is an incredible story. You know, someone who comes from the beginnings that Sir Keir Starmer did, to then go on and hold the roles he did, both in public office and also become Sir Keir Starmer. That is a story that I would want to tell any one of my constituents, anyone who grew up in my area, that if you want to be that, you can, and this country will enable you to do it. Mm. Unfortunately, what I think happened with Keir is that while we were in opposition and, you know, getting us back to a party that was seen credibly and able to govern was a really important part of the journey. But once he became prime minister, that connection with people that I think people do see as important and has become a bigger threat part of our current politics, that didn't come through. And I think the vision that we hoped he'd had, that I'd hoped he'd been able to deliver on, just wasn't there. So I don't think it's a huge, you know, fundamental failing in the Labour Party that created Keir Starmer and took him to become Prime Minister. But I do think it speaks of a time that we're at where politics has changed, the way we connect with people has changed, and what is expected of our politicians sits differently. And unfortunately, Keir wasn't able to step up to that, and I couldn't see it changing.
Yeah. But Andy Burnham's come in, an extraordinary passage of play in politics, where you have a sitting MP giving up his seat to allow the Mayor of Manchester to stand. He wins a thumping great majority over a fairly strong reform challenge in an area where reform is actually very strong. And so then within weeks, he is Prime Minister of the country. I mean, are you an Andy Burnham supporter?
I'm looking forward to this film, by the way, because it's going to be great when it comes out, whoever dramatises what's just happened here in politics. Yes, I am. I think Andy has shown, you know, his journey's been incredibly interesting, but I've known Andy for a long time. He came down and campaigned here in when I was standing in Rochester several times during my by-election, and I got to know him a bit then. And from what I've seen in terms of what he's done in Manchester, how he led that charge in Makerfield. So not only comfortably beating reform, it wasn't close.
No.
And he was actually able to beat, you know, if you look at both the votes for reform and restore, which people were talking about, even if you add those two votes, they weren't close. So you can see that he won comfortably on, I would say, a battle of ideas. And he was able to say and articulate, he was quite honest with Makerfield, and he said, look, I am planning to go and go for the top job. So despite that, they put their trust in him. And I think I've liked what I've seen so far, particularly the very recent announcement around social care, because I think that is so incredibly important.
Yeah, I want to come on to that. I mean, he's made a lot of pronouncements. He wants to do this and he wants to do that. But the great unanswered question is, how are you going to pay for it? It's all fine and dandy to have, you know, warm words and getting people on your side and being likable. He is a likable fellow. There's no two words about that. And he has a certain amount of charisma. But you can't make promises you can't deliver on.
And also he's agreed to keep fiscal rules, which are essentially the way the governments willingly constrain their ability to deliver on the mandate from the public. How, you know, do you think it's possible for someone like Burnham to deliver like really transformative policies like a complete reform of social care while basically signing up to the straitjacket of the OBR?
No, and look, this is the tricky situation that we all face, don't we, as a government, is where do we make the money? And this was the huge challenge that we had with both Keir and with Rachel as Chancellor. But look, Andy is a seasoned politician. That's something that we can agree on. And he's been doing this for a long time. But he also recognises and understands that you cannot, you know, what he cannot simply do is come in and make huge, huge promises and not be able to back them up. And I think that's why putting John Healey in as someone who, again, has an incredible amount of experience.
One of the longest continually serving front benches in Labour. I think he served under Corbyn as well.
Yes, he did. He did. And he's, you know, he's had... certainly isn't his first rodeo, and he, you know, he's got a strong understanding of how we can make this work. So I think that has been, and it was maybe a surprise to some that John Healey was given the role of Chancellor. But actually, I think it is the right decision, and I think that it, you know, the faith that I have in both Andy's understanding and experience and actually what he has done in Greater Manchester, which I don't think, you know, should be dismissed. I know it's not Kent and it's certainly different, but in terms of how he used that role to be able to bring forward some of these things already in his role in Mayor of Greater Manchester and then working alongside John Healey, I have confidence that this will be, you know, we will be able to deliver on the promises that have been made in the right way. And I think this is exactly the conversations we need to have. If we take adult social care, for example, and social care generally, it is one of the most crippling areas of finances, particularly in local government.
Oh, absolutely. It is about, you know that.
I know that, yes. Yeah. I've been a councillor for many years, cabinet member. I know that it is the thing that is absolutely destroying the finances of lots and lots of unitary authorities and local authorities and councils up and down the country. And we take Medway for an example. I mean, and this is when people say to me, and I go on doors and they say, can you just fix this road and these potholes? You know, why is this happening? Why is this happening? What social care has done, and specifically adult social care has done to our councils, is taken away their powers to do everything else that we expect our council to do.
Mm.
You know, fix our roads, the council tax that we pay, you know, make to be able to have roads that aren't filled with potholes, to be able to pick up our rubbish, and certainly that's still happening in Medway and with our weekly bin collection. But those are, you know, choices that have to be made. Keep our leisure centres open, make sure we still have access to all of those things that you expect from your council. And therefore, if national government does not fix this problem, we are simply creating a huger problem further down the line. So the fact that Andy Burnham has announced, and he wants to work with the other parties as well on this, so he's invited...
That was an interesting departure, wasn't it?
Yes. I think it's a really serious politics. You know, we're not the same. We're not the Tories. We're not the Lib Dems. We're certainly not Reform. But when it comes to something like this, we do have to be honest about the situation we face in this country.
Is it also needing to work with other parties for this? Mm. You have a majority of more than 100 seats. Surely that's a sign of... You know, you can have a huge number of seats in Parliament, but not actually be that politically powerful. You know, a government with, you know, genuine popular mandate and a majority that strong could absolutely transform this country. And already, you know, second Prime Minister after an election, Andy Burnham's in the position of having to basically seek the cooperation of opposition parties.
Well, I don't think he's having to seek the cooperation of opposition parties, but he's choosing to. And that, I think, is the difference here. So... Look,
and the other two parties are willing. That's
absolutely. Yeah. And look, and this is the thing, you know, you're absolutely right. We have this huge majority. So when it comes to voting this through, I don't think there'll be any opposition in terms of Labour or being able to get that through our MPs. We all recognise the challenge that social care presents. So I don't think that's where the challenge is coming from. But I think there is recognition that this is such a big transformation, that this is such an important part of what we need to do as a country, that... actually having that conversation with the other two parties in the room, so having the Lib Dems, not well, more than other two parties, but certainly with the Lib Dems and with the Conservatives, is a really important part of getting this right.
Okay. Now, Shabba, this just literally 10 minutes before I walked into the room, a bit of polling dropped from electoral calculus, which Labour on 245, the Conservatives on 132, and Reform on 127. Now, bearing in mind about 4 or 5 months ago, Reform were predicted to get enough for a majority, a small majority, but a majority nonetheless. And now they've tumbled down into third place. What's going on? I mean, it's almost, but by the same token, you know, 6 months' time, you know, Andy Burnham might be in third place. It's so hard to predict these days, isn't it?
It really is difficult. And that's why we shouldn't spend all our time focusing on the polls. They're important. They're an important measure. But, you know, you have to kind of manage them with a little bit of...
I do choose electoral calculus because I've followed electoral calculus for many, many years. And generally speaking, they're never too far wrong.
Do you think? They've got me losing. So I'll to Reform. So I'll see how it goes.
But, yes. Well, exactly. But that's, but they, generally speaking, I mean, they were the ones... And no one believed it. They, you know, electoral calculus predicted that Reform would win Kent County Council. And we all looked at each other and said, that's impossible, you know. And look what happened, 57 out of the 81 seats. So I'm just saying, but yeah, you can look at the polls. The polls look good. Do you think Andy Burnham, if they got better, that he might think, do you know something? Sell it. Let's go for it. Let's have a snub general election. And then he'll have a mandate based on a manifesto.
Well, he's ruled it out at the minute. I also think we have to be cautious when we're looking at polls. As I say, I think we use them as guidance, and I tend to look at the MRPs a bit closer. I think they're always quite helpful. But again,
the MRPs are astonishingly accurate.
They are,
because if you look at YouGov, Electoral Calculus, or More in Common, Find Out Now UK, whichever ones you use that have the MRP. They do tend to be, there is a margin of error, of course there is, you can't expect them to be, you know.
They don't know exactly the local landscape.
Exactly, and they don't know about the hospital or the potholes or whatever, they don't know that stuff. But generally speaking, they do tend to sort of like focus in on the voter and the themes that they're picking up. Mm. So you don't think there'll be an early general election. But if he goes long, which is 3 years away, and that seems a lifetime in politics at the minute, is there always the danger that you slip back into third place again?
So, look, I think at the minute, I don't think there'll be a general election. Obviously, I'm not going to be putting any bets down on it because anything can happen. And I found that in 2 years of politics and of being an MP, 2 years of being a member of parliament, I found how quickly things can change. And what I will say is I think what he cannot do is take his foot off the pedal. So he started off strong. He's coming up with some clear ideas. And we've just had a conversation around plans to potentially transform social care, which would be huge. We've got to ensure that that doesn't change, that journey that he's looking to take us on as a country, making sure that we deliver the change that I feel the Labour government promised in 2024. We've got to show and ensure that people make and feel that. So that's where he's got to be. It is interesting that the polls, and I do find them fascinating. I think the conversation around reform is an interesting one as well. I think what's been happening with Clacton and the by-election that we've got going on there with Nigel Farage up against the bin. I'll be back in the bin, by the way. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. But
it's a violation of Labour Party rules, putting a non-Labour candidate. But I suppose Labour aren't standing, actually, so I think you might technically be allowed to endorse anyone. I won't tell you anything.
Well, there are 32 other candidates. Not that we're going to name them, of course.
But actually, look, this idea that Nigel Farage thinks that somehow he's above politics or any type of scrutiny in this country, I just find quite shocking, really. So, you know, his finances are being looked at, rightly so. A huge donation was made, £5 million. And he decides that rather than have that scrutiny, like any other politician would be expected to from any other party, that instead he's going to go forward and have this by-election, a farce and a facade, which I think really exposes him for who he is. And so we're going to go ahead with this. And if he wins the election, well, the problem doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't.
The question is still there. And I think that's probably some of that is being reflected in the polls that we're seeing as well. People are, you know, why? Okay, reform have got, I believe, they shout very loudly. They like to highlight the problems. They're not really there when it comes to the solutions, but they've been riding high on the polls for some time now. And fine, fair enough. But they also have to stand the test of scrutiny, like any other party. Otherwise, what is the point of our democracy, one of the oldest in the world, if our politicians aren't held to those standards?
So, Labour Party was founded, 125 years ago now, as the political wing of a mass workers' movement, which doesn't really exist anymore. The only powerful trade unions left in this country really are the ones in the public sector and a small number of ones in essential services like the railways. Labour Party, you know, over the course of that 100 years has gone in and out of relevance and now sits in government with the votes of less than one in five eligible adults in this country, according to the IPPR's research on both electoral turnout and people not registering. And the Labour Party now doesn't even publicly report its membership figures to the National Executive Committee because it's collapsed so precipitously from the peak of almost 600,000 under when Jeremy Corbyn was leader to now, I think the last estimate was well under 250,000. All these things in mind, do you think Labour will still be relevant as a party in 10 years' time?
Of course. I mean, look, we're having a wider conversation here around our politics as a whole. This isn't just about the Labour Party. And so everything you said there about the Labour Party, think that our society has shaped and changed and moved. The way that people work has shaped and changed and moved. The Labour Party, as the Workers' Party, came out of the trade union movement, as you've rightly said. But what does that look and feel like today? What does, you know, how do we operate? We are living in a very different economy. The jobs of the future are going to look and feel really, really different. They're going to be focused around AI. I know that, you know, as scary as that sometimes sounds, they're going to be focused around energy. They're going to be looking at the world in a completely different way. And what the Labour Party, and certainly what we've been doing in government and showing that we're able to do, is recognise how that world is changing. And we've got more to do on that front. I think the question is broader. It's about our politics. Will the Labour Party be relevant? Okay, I'll go back to that. I believe it will be, but will it be exactly how it is today? Possibly not, because our political landscape is changing. And it's changing quite dramatically. And I don't think this is just true in this country, but we're looking at how new parties are coming through, the rise of populism, the rise of a different type of debate that, if I'm honest, I didn't think existed anymore. You know, I grew up in a space and world where I thought things had changed in such a way that we wouldn't be having debates like we are today around whether I belong in this country or not, because of the colour of my skin. But we are. Those conversations are happening, and they're happening quite loudly. They're happening in our public domain. They're happening through our leaders. So we are looking at, we look at that in the geopolitical context, and we look at what's happening in Russia, Ukraine, and what that means. For the first time ever, we're living in a world where the risk of war, in a way that we've not seen it in this country for decades, is looking really, really different. So the conversations are having to change alongside that. Do I believe that a progressive party that stands up for working people, that has equality at its heart, that believes it doesn't matter where you come from, who you are, that you should have those opportunities in life, is still going to be relevant in that space? Yes. Do I think it will look exactly like it does today? Maybe not.
If Ali Burnham decides to go long 2029, I mean, realistically, are you going to, and all your other Labour MPs, realistically going to hang on to your seats here? Because the polls have been saying the reform was going to take them all, really, or pretty much
in Kent,
all of them.
You mean?
Yeah, in Kent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, the polls are definitely saying that I'm losing my seat. So I'm, but look, I'm a Gillingham girl. I'm a bit of a fighter. So I'm not going to let that get me down. You can get fixated on polls, or you can go out and do the job that you're elected to do. And for me, that's the important bit. You know, I've been given a mandate. If I can sit there and worry about what's going to happen at the next election, I'll never, ever get my job done. And there is so much that I want to do, you know, looking at my town centre. And we all know that Gillingham High Street has massive challenges. It's one of my biggest projects that I'm trying to get change in. Looking at the wider conversations that we're having around children, young people not in education, looking at opportunities, how can we grow them in this part of Kent, specifically in Gillingham for me, which is so close to London, Medway Town, so close to London, and yet I feel sometimes don't quite meet their ambitions in the way that they should. How can we make all of that happen? And look, for me, this will be a test of what the voters decide, and this is what happens when you get into politics. But if you don't go into that with a fight, with your ideas there, and an opportunity to say, look, this is what I stand for, this is what I believe, then why are you in this game?
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
When he was leader of Kent County Council, Conservative Roger Gough was in favour of local government reorganisation, but failed to convince the government to back Kent in the first wave of devolved local authorities. This was something of a disaster, and Roger said at the time, "There's no cavalry coming over the hill, just the hill." But the Tories soon lost the election to a former UK landslide, and Councillor Gough lost his seat. And he's here to reflect on what's happened since. You're a dispassionate observer of what's going on. We learned on the other week that it's going to be 4B. 4B is the North, East, West and Mid and South Kent sort of combined, running down the middle of them. Is that going to work for Kent?
Well, it's not the solution I would have opted for had I been still a player in these things and arguing for it.
What would you have gone for, Roger?
But I would have advocated for the option 3. Tris, and I think through the long discussions we had about all this, I think it was always the case that I would have advocated for that and would have sought to persuade my fellow county councillors at Kent that that was the best option. And I think we always knew that there were going to be options for 4 put forward as well, as we know, we had a whole range of options went into government. Worth saying, incidentally, you said at the start I was a big advocate of local government reorganisation. I was a big advocate of devolution. And there is a distinction between the two. I was very, very strongly in favour of Kent having a mayoral strategic authority.
I should have been clear. But
well, no, it's only worth mentioning because I think it ties into where we are. So the government's made its decision. As I say, it's not the option I would have favoured. Equally, I think it is better, frankly, to have a decision than no decision. because anybody who's ever been involved in these things, and we talked a lot, I remember, to councils who had been involved, Cumbria, for example, North Yorkshire and others. However long you think you have for this, probably add many, many months. If you think you should have started on it today, the truth is you should have started 18 months ago. Now, a huge amount of work, I think, has gone on between Kent councils, including Medway, on this. But there's a limit to what you can do until you actually know what the finish line looks like. So having a decision is a better thing than no decision. I do think that there are quite tricky balances in terms of what reorganised local government in Kent would ideally look like, but we've got what we've got. What we don't have, to come back to the point I was mentioning earlier on, is devolution. And my view, and I think a whole number of people would share this, is that reorganisation without devolution is, if not quite the worst of all worlds, certainly has some major drawbacks. And the argument that you do not have one voice for the county, and that you will not see Kent Kent and Medway benefiting from the things that mayoral strategic authorities across the country will, I think is a big negative. So to me, that's almost still the biggest issue.
The one thing that everybody said almost immediately they heard it was 4B was the problem with East Kent and the centrals, the central column down the middle, which takes in sort of you know, north to south through the middle of the county. And they said that East Kent will not be able to support itself financially. It won't be able to generate the incomes needed to support all the burden that it has to carry on things like social care or whatever. And the mid-Kent region will probably have the same worries. Do you agree with that?
I think there is, I mean, we'll have to see the detail as to how it all plays out, but I think there is something to that. Now, an element of that, frankly, is unavoidable once you do any kind of local government reorganisation, because if you look at where the patterns of deprivation, the patterns of need and so on are across the county, then they are relatively concentrated. Now, there is an argument that would say, well, actually, if you look at the East Kent model that has been gone for, it's, you know, other options were available which might have been worse, because you have some areas of deprivation and you also have some areas where you've got a stronger tax base within that authority. The same to some extent would go for the Mid Kent but authority. But in both cases, it is a problem. The other thing which may help them a little bit over time is if government continues down its sort of fair funding route, or their definition of fair funding, then parts of the county, particularly in the east, would might well benefit from it. But no, I think there is a problem there. I think there was always going to be a problem with that particular issue. And I think we will have to see how that plays out. But it is a difficulty.
One of the many options which was rejected by the government, including obviously the one, your preferred one, for three unitary authorities, East, West and North, one, the Reform County Council leadership's proposal for one massive unitary authority, which I think will become the biggest unit of local government in the world, was the so-called Medway option, was the brainchild of your former colleagues on Medway Council, now Sharba, for a different set of four options. Were you in favour of that version of it? And what do you think that the government has now chosen this other one? We sort of commiserating with Vince and the like after the announcement.
So I did support the 4D option. I felt that it had a better mix and in terms of how we could deliver across Kent. But actually, I think there are ways that 4B can also, you know, can also work. And I agree with Roger on a few things. Firstly, I'm really pleased there is a decision, because I think that is key to this. Secondly, I am pleased that this conversation is happening. Look, I personally would also, I also believe that having a directly elected mayor would be transformative for this region, because I think that the unfunding that can unlock, the potential that can make in terms of how we work strategically and what that can deliver in terms of infrastructure and change, would be transformative
okay.
for this area.
Let me just pick up on that, Nishaba. I mean, have you had any conversation with Andy Burnham, or will you have a conversation with Andy Burnham about a mayoralty for Kent?
I would love to be able to have that discussion with him, and it's something that I will look to pick up. And I know there are other colleagues who feel the same. However, I don't know, you know, at this point in time, the key thing is that we're looking at local government reorganisation. And we've got, I disagree with Roger on one thing, which is the three option. I don't think that would have necessarily been the right move. So I certainly backed one that looked at four authorities, four unitary authorities. So I think that 4B is something that can be worked. There's a lot of work to be done now in terms of what that feels like and how we get that onto the ground. So I think the focus has to be on ensuring that, you know, in terms of services, in terms of delivery, that we're in, that those authorities are given the best chance possible.
Roger, where are the big headaches? Because you're going to have to disaggregate, what they're calling dismantling authorities and disaggregating the services and then putting them all back together again. Just for the benefit of people who maybe not sort of across this as much as our guests are, how will that actually work? The nuts and bolts of it from someone who's actually run a huge authority serving 1.5 million people with a turnover of 2.5 billion quid. That's a big job. So you just have to spend a lot, and you've got 12 local authorities, 13 local other local authorities, which have to be dismantled as well. Just explain to us how that you think that that will actually happen.
Well, I think there are two elements. One is just the whole mechanics of doing that, and that is extremely difficult for the reasons we've described. In some ways, actually, the dismantling or disaggregation of the big services that Kent County Council has is only part of the story. You've also then got to bolt in at one point, for instance, a unitary authority, Medway as it stands, and all the district services as well. So it is a very, very time-consuming process. It does mean also that the focus within the organisations is going to be on that, whilst at the same time they've got to do the day job. So that will be difficult. The argument about disaggregation, and perhaps the point on which we disagree a little bit, is to do with the impact of which number of councils you have, because the big impact is disaggregating areas like children's social services, adult social care, or all those big services. And that is going to be really quite difficult in terms of just building the capacity across a whole series of organisations. So you can have four directors of children's services, four directors of adult services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where much of the cost and complexity comes in. And I think the financial modelling that was done by KPMG for all the councils in Kent, so it wasn't, you know, a sort of hit job on behalf of the old county council view of these things, was, it was pretty clear that the more councils you go towards, the bigger those disaggregation costs and the longer it takes you to get to the point of being able to pay it back. So I think there's a big challenge in that. There's one other area of this which we haven't touched on, which I think is worth mentioning. And I absolutely agree that we need to get the mayor and the mayoral strategic authority as soon as possible, because if we don't, we have a whole number of big areas that need strategic decision making where there won't be a body to do that. A clear example is unaccompanied minors. Mm. And that was something which was a huge challenge for us at KCC in my time leading it. Another is, again, related to our coastal status and our ports, is everything to do with Operation Brock and all the traffic implications of what happens at the port, which will now ultimately cross three unitary authorities. We need that sort of central strategic focus also to be able to deal with the issues that really are countywide.
This is what also I sort of puzzles me slightly, because if you've got four unitary authorities and, you know, if you have one bit of the A20 that runs through the west, then suddenly enters the mid-Kent and south. I mean, at what point you're going to have people talking to one another. Stuart Jeffrey, who runs Maidstone Borough Council for the Green Party, he said this is only going to work if the people running these four unitary authorities actually talk to one another and cooperate. Because in the absence of a mayor, which would be the umbrella, you know, that's not going to work. But if you have a political party who maybe doesn't want to play quite the same play as fairly as Stuart has suggested, what happens then?
Well, I think that's where, and remember, when we talk about mayoral change, it's not just the mayor. It's a mayoral, it's what's called a mayoral strategic authority, or used to be called a mayoral combined authority.
And all the money comes through there.
And that's bringing those authorities together. So I think there's going to be a vital role for that bit of it. It's not just the mayor, it's the councils, the unitary councils coming together. Now, again, there will always be a challenge if you have councils with different views of the world working together. But to some extent, if you create the structures, you certainly create a big incentive to do so. And I think one thing we've done very well across Kent and Medway over quite some time is actually, and you look at the political complexion now, you know, county council is reform. Mm. It was conservative before. You have still a few conservative led authorities, you know, in the West. You have Labour authorities, you have Liberal Democrat authority, you have two Green councils, mm-hmm. you have an independent-led council. And yet we did actually all manage to work together pretty effectively and overcome where there were points of difference. I certainly always worked extremely well with Vince as my counterpart in Medway. So I think you can do it, but it really helps if you've got the structures in place to do that. And that's what we haven't got. So going back to what we've been saying before, the sooner devolution, as well as local government reorganisation, comes to us, much the better.
Something I realise that could be a kind of point of future political contention, obviously it's not been made that explicit, but one of the big possible ways of saving money in these new unitary authorities is a reduction of staff. You can have officers, you know, responsible things over a larger area. It would be very surprising if this process doesn't end basically in job cuts. There are, what, 10,000-20,000 local government employees in Kent at the moment. One would imagine under the new system there'll be significantly less of them. However, basically one of the only places in the country where the unions still have any power is in local government. So I'm curious particularly what you think, Navjal, because obviously Unison cuts quite a mean shape in the psyche of the Labour Party. Do you think there's a possible risk that as LGR happens, the government can find itself in conflict with unions because it's basically saying, okay, to serve the agenda of LGR, you need to lose loads of staff?
I wasn't expecting that question. Look, the unions are strong in local government, and as they are across the public sector, and
strong enough to
play a vital
the government's plan.
Well, no, not necessarily. I think what they want to do is, you know, they want to have sensible conversations. And of course, look, when you're having such a transformative change, it's going to have an impact. And I think we have to be honest about that. There's no point suggesting that there isn't going to be any change. We've already discussed the impact on potential services. So whenever you do something like this, of course it is, you know, it has that sort of impact on a workforce and on everything across the piece. But the point of this is being able to have the sensible discussions. And that's something that in the Labour Party we're very good at doing with the unions, unlike perhaps some parties of other colours, where, look, they have a right to be able to kind of put forward their views in terms of what works for their workers. And we have to find a way forward with that. But in terms of this change, it's one that I think is needed. Now, we can debate whether you know, the boundaries that have been picked are the correct ones or the timing of it. And I think there can be questions asked about all of that and how it's going to work. But whenever we were going to do this, it was going to be difficult because of the nature of what we're doing. But do I think it's necessary? Yes, I do. I also agree that having a mayoral system in place would be better for all the reasons that have been discussed. But I do believe that the ability to have, you know, the current system doesn't really work. It doesn't work for Kent. And look, I say this as someone who loves Medway and was a Medway councillor for the best part of a decade. And frankly, loves my little bubble in Medway sometimes. But actually, does it make sense? No, not necessarily. So you've got a unitary authority of about 280,000 people. And then you've got Kent, which is, you know, I think about 82% of the
84.
So it's something like that. It's like, you know, essentially the breakup is about 16-17% is Medway and the rest of it is Kent. That doesn't work. And when we look at some of the conversations we've had around transformative changes across the country, we've talked lots about the mayor of Manchester or the former mayor of Manchester today. How do you deliver some of that? Well, you have to have the mechanisms and tools to be able to do it. So that's why I think this is the right thing to do. Yes, there will be some pain that comes alongside it, and we've got to work through that. And we might have some lessons to be learned about what comes in the future. But I think it is a step we have to take.
Okay. We've got 9 months until the shadow elections, Roger. And we don't know how many councillors there will be, but we seem to think that they'll be roughly cut in the current 81 divisions of Kent County Council, and there will be three per division, three, which makes a bigger sort of constituency than a ward that you'd have a district or borough council. How do you go about finding an election for that? You've got the skin in the game. You're not standing in the election, so therefore, you know, you're not coming out. But how do you strategize an election like that?
Well, I think all the parties will have to focus on what they believe is most winnable for them. Mm. And I think you've actually got very different political complexions across different parts of the county. And you see that in, to some extent, the outcomes that we've seen in, I mean, I think in a sense, the county election last year, which swept us away, swept me away.
I was there watching.
You were. Is not necessarily a great guide, because I think it was at a particular point in the cycle. It's clear that Reform is a very strong player in the whole system in a way that it wasn't if you go back a couple of years. But I'm not sure the 2025 elections tell you exactly how it will all play out this time round. But I do.
Well, they've just won, in fairness. They've just won the Cuxton, Halling, and Riverside by election quite handsomely as well. Well, I mean,
they lost two seats in Grays.
Yeah.
In Essex. So
they have, but that's the only election they've won since 2025 in Kent. But they're still a big force. There's no two ways away.
I'd be probably the last person to deny that. But I think there is a question of looking at the existing dispensation you've got across those different areas. You can clearly see that's for some different party, there are areas they will want to focus on, and they will try to strategize accordingly and see who their main opposition is, at a much more granular level. So okay, I think it's going to be quite fragmented.
Yeah, and that has been said more than once by politicians across the board. I mean, from a conservative point of view, where do you think is winnable?
Well, I'm not going to get drawn on that, because I'm sure my colleagues would really thank me if I turned around and said which parts were not winnable. So, clearly you can see where each, as I say, each of the parties is stronger at the moment. If you combine both relative performance, if I can put it that way, in 2025 with the outcomes of district elections in the slightly further back past, then you get a fair sense of where the core areas of strength are, and parties will doubtless, as I say, position themselves accordingly. The Conservative Party no differently from anybody else. Mm.
The Reform are quite strong in the East, so I mean there's a strong argument that they could take that one, for example. But do you think that the presence of, say, Restore could have an effect on the right-wing vote? There's also the Heritage Party. There's also the Conservative Party, obviously, which is the tradition. You've got an opportunity of a four-way splinter of the right-wing vote, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, there has been some signs nationally that you see of... I mean, a couple of things we know have happened. One is that Reform's share of the vote has been in polling, has been falling now for some time, through much of this calendar year and particularly recently. Restore appears to be part of that. I don't think it's the whole explanation. Mm. So at the moment, those polls still show Reform in a strong position overall. But actually, it's pretty much a three-way split nationally on many of the polls now. They fluctuate a bit, but it's not very, there's not a huge difference between, depending on which poll you look at, between Reform, Labour and Conservatives. Mm. And so there will be a lot to play for. And as you say, we are still 9 months off those elections and the world already looks a very different place from 9 months ago. I suspect it will again in 9 months' time.
Mm. Yeah. Nishaba, experienced Medway councillor, you know that area really, really well. Medway will fall into the North Kent Unitary Authority area. Is that winnable? Is that a viable one for you?
Well, Labour? Like Roger, I don't want to be saying anything that gets me into trouble with any colleagues. And look, the world is, as we've just discussed, the world is constantly changing in terms of politics, and a few months can change everything. But as somebody who knows the community here in Medway and recognises and knows what we kind of face, I think, look, we're in for a fight and we're up for it. And that's got to be the key. I think the political landscape is so, it's so transformative at the minute. It's very difficult to predict where some of these things are going to go. We've seen certain results in certain areas that very much fall to type. And then in other areas, things that are happening which you just would never expect. And I think we're in a very different political conversation at the minute, which makes it quite difficult to predict this. But do I believe that we should be out there campaigning for every single vote? Yes, absolutely. And that's what I'd be expecting across North Kent.
Sorry.
And just to say, I think, you know, picking up on that, the degree of transformation we've seen in, or certainly significant change in parties' fortunes. I mean, it was clearly pretty bleak for the Conservatives from the time, certainly when we had our May elections, through to certainly the point of the party conference last autumn. Mm-hmm. It has been heading up since then. And I think we've seen a strengthening of the Conservative Party's position. Clearly, Labour now has a new leader, mm-hmm. and that has some evidence that's giving a bounce. Again, we'll have to see how long either of those phenomena last. But I think these are really good examples of just how dynamic the process is.
Yeah. Just finally, Roger, before we let you go, what are you up to these days? You're not going to stand at the next election. I thought you would, but you tell me that you're not going to. So what are you up to these days?
Mixture of things. I'm doing some work with a cross-party group in Parliament, which I've had a long association with. But then also, actually, I've been doing quite a lot of work as a what's called a member peer with the local government association, supporting councils, particularly some who've got quite severe pressures at the moment, as many have. I also have an unpaid but quite interesting research affiliation in Cambridge, where I'm trying to find the time to bring forward some work on exactly these kind of topics.
Roger Goff, thank you very much indeed. Roger Goff, thank you very much indeed for coming in today. Nishabha Khan, thank you for staying on and having a chat with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Dan, what did you make of that then? What were your takeaways from it?
It was interesting to speak to a Labour MP who's so closely involved, but more behind the scenes in the snatching of the crown from Keir Starmer, essentially, as mentioned. And Nishabha was one of the first to jump ship with her resignation.
She was quite candid, wasn't she?
Parliamentary. Yeah, she was very, which is good. But I suppose there's nothing to lose now. Keir Starmer is an irrelevance. He's just the honourable member.
Played the right cards.
Yeah, he's the honourable member for Holborn and St Pancras now. So I don't think his scorn won't keep her up at night. But yeah, it was good to hear her be quite candid, but I was also quite surprised by the fact. So she, you know, when Jeremy Corbyn was leader of the Labour Party, she was very supportive of him. She supported Keir Starmer coming to power in the leadership of the Labour Party in 2020, and then now she supports Andy Burnham. And you know, genuine belief and self interest often go hand in hand. But I think what is implicit in this, and also reflective of a lot of the psyche of the Labour Party, is, you know, if pressed, she would probably still describe herself as a socialist and quite radical. But when I asked, you know, what is Labour Party for now, if there is no trade union, you know, meaningful mass workers movement for you to represent, she's like, oh, well, you know, it's a progressive party with equality at its heart. That's not the same thing as what people in the Labour Party like to think, therefore, which is a party by, of, and for the working class. For
I think what I took away from what she said also was the fact that because politics and the sands shift so quickly, that they have to be nimble enough to be able to sort of try and move with it and to retain that kind of relevance. But I mean, she wasn't advocating socialism, I suppose.
No, well, I mean, you know, ask anyone in the Labour Party today, you know, what do they mean by, you know, what do they call themselves? You know, even Tony Blair would call himself a socialist, at least when he thought his career depended on it. But you ask most of them, what does it mean? Does it mean the transformation of society and the transfer of power to those who work rather than those who earn? Like, no, obviously not. What she's talking about, it was a progressive party with equality. It's like, that's not the same as, you know, that's not even really radical social transformation of any sort. That's exactly the kind of politics which have dominated this country for 30 years. So I think a kind of conservatism and a kind of doubling down and acceptance of a walking back from the radical ambitions which the Labour Party claims is implicit in everything that Labour politicians today say. And Nishabha expressed it very well, but is still nonetheless there.
Yeah. It was interesting what Roger said, was essentially with the new four unitary authority system, which is now going to happen in the next couple of years, he's basically said that there is no way on God's green earth that this is going to work unless there's a mayor to act as the umbrella above the local government. So it'll be above the local government reorganisation, you need to have that strategic mayor authority. Is that something you're picking up on the ground?
No, I mean, I haven't detected any great clamour for a mayoralty personally, but since it works quite well in Andy Burnham's manner, I imagine that, yeah, when they talk about devolution, presumably that's what they mean, so that's what I imagine will come. But I was also interested by the fact Now, Sharba didn't dwell on the fact that her, you know, the Medway, the quote unquote Medway option, the other option for four, was defeated. And she seemed to think, you know, it was like, oh, I preferred that option. Whereas maybe Rob's a better place to speak than this to me. But I would imagine that the people in Medway, Labour administration in particular, were quite upset when it turned, when the results of the LGR decision came through, that their chosen option wasn't picked.
Well, I think they're playing their cards pretty close to their chest on that. I mean, the most that Vince Maple, the leader, said was that he was disappointed, which, you know, is, I think,
he's very disappointed.
Yeah, I think he probably is. And he has made the point that, you know, the reason why they came up with their own plan was because of sort of quirks of the way that local government has developed over the years. You know, Swale, many patients in Swale come to Medway Hospital rather than somewhere else. But they're, you know, so the Medway option kind of lumped Swale and Medway together. But that's not the direction the government's going with. I think somebody who, I think Vince Maple is also quite keen on the mayor as well, just to go back to that for a second, because, you know, he basically way, way back when it was a discussion about what level of local government reorganisation we were going to, he really bid for the sort of mayor, you know, having that as an option and fast track to that point, which obviously they didn't get. And his point, which he has made several times, is we have got to get this ready and going as soon as possible because we want to get to that next stage of getting a mayor, getting all the extra powers that that unlocks for the region. Because, as you say, areas like Teesside, Yorkshire, Manchester, Birmingham, well, West Midlands rather, have sort of really benefited from those powers. And he wants to see that here as well.
You can find more at our politics page at Kent Online, plus the latest breaking news. And for even more, you can find details of how to sign up for our weekly newsletter at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KM TV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KM TV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.